On today's Question of Faith, is it a sin to receive psychological help? Hey everybody, welcome to Question of Faith. I am Mike Hayes. I'm the Director of Young Adult Ministry in the Diocese of Cleveland.
And I'm Father Damian Ference, the Vicar for Evangelization.
I'm Terry Yeoman, the Director of Marriage and Family Ministry.
Welcome back, Terry.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in a while, so it's great.
I know, because I've been sending my counterpart, Maria Wankata.
Exactly.
Yeah, we like having both of you on. We've never had you both on at the same time, but we will do that sometime
we'll do that
in the future.
That'd
be cool.
That'd be great, yeah. So, is it a sin to receive psychological help, is the question that was written in today. I surely hope not.
I surely hope not, and I'm wondering where the question came from, especially how linked we've always been to medical care and science in the Catholic Church. It surprised me.
Yeah, so we could start out easily by saying, well, the answer is no, and then the question is, well, why not no?
Why not no? I would say we would go back to all the things that we know about the human dignity of the person and the respect that we have for that. Our popes, the last three popes, have really pushed that. John Paul II, there was a great one, Christ on the Cross, where he talked about the dignity of the person and that we're this image and likeness of God, and therefore we need to be with them. Pope Francis and all the works about accompanying our people and walking with them as they go through all those things that they experience through mental illness, how we have to just be able to respect and understand them more than be afraid, I think, is one of the big things that's hard for us.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think in terms of the way that we understand formation, so priestly formation, deacon formation, lay ecclesial ministry formation, and even this missionary discipleship formation, that document Workers in the Vineyard, they're all set up on those four domains of formation. And the first one is human. So it's human, spiritual, intellectual, pastoral, or it's often called missionary. Mm-hmm. But that first one, human, as a human being, we are body, we are soul, we are mind, and we have physical health and we have mental health, and taking care of our mental health is a priority. It's key. I think maybe the question comes from if you go see a counselor, a psychiatrist, or a psychologist, are you somehow not being faithful enough or trusting enough in the Lord? And this Catholic response is, no, we are a both-and church, and you need spiritual care and psychological care, and these two things don't compete with each other. If they're done well, they'll actually complement each other. And seeing a spiritual director and often going to counseling or visiting your psychologist or psychiatrist, those two should be working in tandem to bring about a healthy human being.
Yeah. And I would back that completely, Father Damian, and say also that if we aren't caring for that human piece first, the physical well-being, the mental well-being, it's really difficult to get you to the level where you can actually contemplate the spiritual and connect with God when you're not in a place physically or mentally to care for yourself.
Right. The way to your divinity is through your humanity. And so if you ignore your humanity, it's really hard to have a deep spiritual life. And I know from working in the seminary and working with Catholic Christians, and my own experience has been sometimes there's a tendency to try to fix human problems with like spiritual solutions, and that usually doesn't work out too well. You know, like, oh, I've suffered abuse and I've had trauma and all this. If I just pray my rosary and make my holy hour every day, then that's going to fix all that. Rosary is super important. Holy hour is super important, but the Lord will want you to take those hurts, those traumas, and work them out on a human level as well. With his divine help comes in, but it's not we're not angels, and so we don't treat our problems as angels do, you know?
Yeah, there's a difference between psychological help or, you know, traditional therapy and spiritual direction, for that matter. You know, I'm a spiritual director, and I when someone comes to me, my focus is always on their relationship with God and their relationship with prayer and those kinds of things. I'm not there to try to remove a psychological block from them. But I know enough to know what the signs of having a psychological block are and receive training in order to do that. And when I notice those things, Terry, you just sort of
nodding my head.
Yeah, no, but you sort of said it before. Like, if I notice that there's a psychological block, the person's not going to be able to work on their spiritual life because of that.
Correct.
So I have to refer them to somebody else and say, you need to go and work on this with this person who is not me, right? Mm-hmm. And then Yeah, and then maybe you can come back and start to work on it slowly, bit by bit. Sometimes you could even work in consort with a psychologist and a spiritual director. I know someone, a friend of mine is a psychologist, and he said that he was dealing with someone who had a scrupulosity issue. And he said and he was able to work with their spiritual director in order to help them move along. And he said, and they sort of worked in consort, and it was a good, it was a nice little, you know, a little collaboration that was able to happen because of that. So, yeah.
I think it can get real creative too when people are concerned about, well, you're relying on medication or you're doing something that, you know, there becomes a confusion. And I think it's important to also know that if all the professionals are talking together, that they're all going to be working together for what's best for the person and when it's necessary. And I think as church sometimes it can be really scary when we think of the people that often struggle with this are also the ones that are incarcerated, they're homeless, they're victimized more often. And those look scary to people. So when we are trying to help and we don't know how to help those folks that are there in those situations, it can be frightening. And we need to know how to, like, non-judgmentally accept and love them. And where are the services that we have and what can we do to make these situations better to accompany others?
Well, the stigma of mental illness is less. It's still there. You know,
it's horribly there.
And, like, people don't realize, I think, that... so, like, I take cholesterol medicine. Let's just put it that way, you know. And if I don't take my cholesterol medicine, that's probably going to be a problem. You know, you're going to be carrying me out of here one day. But, you know, if I had a mental health issue and I didn't take my medication, a similar problem would happen, you know. It still wouldn't be able to function in the way that you're able to do it. And I think people haven't quite made those kinds of distinctions, equating those kinds of distinctions, I guess.
Yeah. We would never judge a diabetic
that
went into like a shock or something like that during a mass. But if suddenly someone had a psychotic episode, everyone in the church is watching and looking and doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think the education empowerment is really huge. And there's some good resources out there. There's a sanctuary course that's actually a Catholic course for parishes and for parish leaders that they can access for free. It's a website. I figured you'd maybe want to link it in the bottom, Mike.
Sure.
But it's something that parish leaders can take part in. I'm pretty sure even an individual could learn from doing something like that just to help them see what their biases are, know where the holes are at their parish about what they could be doing to educate others.
Yeah.
I wonder, too, if the question comes from like a lack of faith that, well, if you're going to a psychologist or psychiatrist, then you're really not trusting fully in God. But the way that God works and heals, sometimes a miracle happens. And, you know, someone's got a tumor and then the tumor's gone. But oftentimes, like I think of my mom's own story when she was first diagnosed with cancer and I was 9 years old praying that the Lord would heal her. Did he? Yes. With good surgeon, good nurses, and good chemotherapy. So God does give us tools, and he gives us community, like experts, doctors, nurses, psychologists, psychiatrists, counselors, that can assist us on the journey as we go. And that's all really important.
Yeah, God created the human brain, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and gave us the ability for, you know, and gave some people the superior ability to work on the human body. Mm-hmm. But when I was a chaplain at the med school in Buffalo, and one of my friends said, I'm the equivalent of an auto mechanic. I'm just smart enough to work on the human body. He said, you know, my friend is brilliant down the road. He's going to cure, you know, he's going to find some gene that cures cancer of some sort. And he goes, that's the level we play at now in terms of the medical field.
And there certainly are professionals who may over-medicate or maybe make that like the first gut reaction, well, just do this. And obviously we want to avoid that. And what we've been talking about here is a nice balance that someone's not just trying to like take care of a symptom, but find what's really going on here and then treat that so that the person can be healthy all around, right?
Correct, yeah. Terry, how do you know you need a therapist, I guess is a good question, right?
There's a lot of really good online assessment tools for anxiety, depression. I think that's what we're seeing a lot of is the anxiety, depression things. I think people know that. You can track your symptoms. I think one of the most powerful things for an individual to do would be to start journaling. writing down things, simple assessments. Where am I at mentally? I've scaled it a 1 to 10 today, and then writing what's happening, writing, you know, what you're eating, drinking, how much sleep you're getting. And then as you go forward, what are the behaviors that you're experiencing? What are your reactions to people? And when you've been journaling that and you know something isn't right and you start to look, then you want to start to reach out to people.
Yeah.
And I always say, you don't just go to one therapist. Mm-hmm. If you don't connect with that person, you may have to try someone else.
Yeah,
it's an
interview
process. And I love what you're saying, Father, about a both and, mm-hmm. that you're trying multiple people. The one piece of that is all those people need to know that they're working towards the same goal.
Right.
That it's actually a team approach, not just I'm going to talk to the priest, he's going to tell me this. I'm going to talk to my spiritual director,
right.
they're going to tell me that. And then my therapist is telling me this, and I'm never going to tell all of them what's actually going on.
Right.
It's the team approach is really important with honesty. I think those are going into probably some more severe mental illnesses too.
Sure.
This is the approach we have with our seminarians as well. So they have a director, like a human formator, and then they have a spiritual director. And now, granted, one is what we call internal form and one's external mm-hmm. form, but you want to let like the seminarian know that he has to be honest with both in such a way where they can be working together, and that you're not, well, I'm going to tell this person that and that person that, because right. then you're not showing the whole of yourself. And right. then the healing's really hard when you're not exposing the wound. Right.
Yeah. And it allows something we would call like triangulation, where you're allowed to just keep playing all the people against each other or mm-hmm. plate spinning. And so you don't want that to be happening either.
Yeah.
I think that most importantly for us as Catholics is the awareness and the education that we need to have about the people that are in the pews. And when we know the numbers that we have about abuse and mental illness, we need to realize that they are there. And what can we do to try and be church to them, to really love them? And a lot of times when you develop an individualized relationship with somebody and you understand why they behave that way or what's happening for them, we're just able to be Christ a mm-hmm. lot in a much more simple way than when we're just looking and we don't have an answer about why someone's acting that way.
Yeah, that's right.
And for them to feel safe that there is someone at the parish that they can share what the truth of their situation is.
Yeah, if I could say a quick word about my own experience, my mom spent the last year of her life in a cancer home and then died a year and a half before I was ordained a deacon. And I didn't know what I was feeling at the time, and it turns out it was grief, but I didn't know how to name it. It would have been very helpful to me to be able to, I mean, I did journal, but it was just an emptiness. It was not feeling anything. And I think if you're listening to this and you've lost someone who's dear to you or a relationship's ended, it's hard to name what grief feels like, but it's almost that there's no feeling there. It's just, What is that? Mm-hmm. That's grief. So I know that. So that when my dad died, I'm like, okay, I know what this is. This is grief. Why am I crying right now? Why am I not crying? It was there. So that was helpful. I kind of learned it the hard way. So if that could save you some time,
right.
See a counselor if you're grieving.
Well, and those losses can compound. I always mm-hmm. call it the grief case. You have one loss, and you put it in a little suitcase, and it goes under the bed. And then the next thing you know, you experience another loss. The grief case comes out, and now you have right. two losses.
The grief case.
Love it. I know, yeah. right? I think I stole that from a woman named Susan that was a counselor down in Wayne County when I was down there. But it's just important to know that it will keep compounding, and learning good, healthy skills is so important because we all believe we're going to be in heaven. But yet it doesn't seem like we're quite ready to go there whenever it's coming time and or looking forward to it. And if we have unsaid issues or things that we need to address with somebody, it can be really scary if somebody dies. Mm. So you're exactly right. The grief is definitely an issue that can cause someone to also spiral then into depression and all of that.
For sure.
There's help. They just have to reach out.
Yeah, exactly. How do you find help, Terry? Like, how do you find a therapist? What are the ways that you go about doing
through,
that?
I think online there's so many right now through states and all of that. We have a lot of people that will call and say, I want a Catholic therapist. A therapist's job is actually to counsel you where you are. So if you came in to a Buddhist should be able to counsel you, even if you're Catholic. If you're a solid counselor and you're Catholic, you... a Jehovah's Witness can come in the door and you'll be able to counsel them. We keep a list of Catholic counselors just because we do know that there are still some things that are very unique to a person's situation. We would encourage them. They can look towards the diocese. We do keep a list, like I said, and they can email. We send that out. We have some definite solid resources through our pastoral Luke Brown out at the seminary. He's always got a good group that he works with as well. And so I'd say you just start reaching out, try to assess, seeing if what they're giving you as homework is helpful or hurtful, and then keep going and stay in contact with somebody once you are trying to reach out. So I always say to people, if they have reached out to me, I've assigned them, like, here's some names for counselors, then check back and let me know that it's working out. And if it isn't working out, you know, or I'll check back in 3 months. How's it going? And so get almost like a buddy so that you have someone else that knows what you're doing together.
Yeah, an advocate of some sort. Yeah. And I think, too, you know, the thing about religion in particular is that there are some psychologists who will conform to a school of thought that would be hostile to religion, right? Those are the ones you might want to avoid if you're a religious person, right? That's why you interview a couple of different people.
And I think you can tell even just going onto people's websites.
Yeah, that's
right. There's a solid one. Greg and Lisa Popcheck out of Steubenville, they have a whole website. They've been doing telehealth for like 30 years. And that's they're very, very Catholic. Yeah. So I think it can be very different about what it is that people are looking for. But counselors should be giving them homework and concrete steps
about
how to improve their situation.
Yeah, and if your homework is stop going to church, praying, and don't believe any of that, then it's probably not the counselor for you.
Right, exactly.
I would say some both and, the spiritual direction and a counselor.
Yeah,
a bit about my personal stuff too, Father D. You know, like my father died in 2018. The grief process is generally 2 years, right? You know, it's more or less, right?
Yes.
So my father died in 2018. My mother died in 2020. You know,
right?
That's 4 years there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, just between the two of them, one right after the other. Mm-hmm. And so I have a counselor, you know, that I see once a week. And then, you know, as soon as my father died, the first thing I did was I said, okay, I'm going to be going through some stuff now. So let me get someone who could really sit and help me.
And I think, so when you say that, I think of for my personal situation when my father lost, it was almost like his whole family over like 4 or 5 years. Like 1 year it was a sister that was only 40. The next year it was the sister that was 60. Then it was his mom. And then within a year it was his dad. Like it was just like this death after death after death.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And all I remember is him just going in the bedroom and closing the door. Like nobody cried. You did the funerals. And realizing then when I went to the training and hearing about the grief case, it was like, wow, we really have a lot to go through here. We need to unpack
this. Lots to unpack, yeah.
And I think there can be things that parishes can do too. So there's actually a study of the saints put out by McGrath Institute. And they actually have like a book study that just for exposure about mental health to help people get the conversation started, where it doesn't mean you have somebody that is struggling with mental health, but you could attend a book study or a discussion group and help people become aware of that.
Yeah, great stuff, Terry. Thanks. And so, Terry, there's a church that we're going to talk about today that you're kind of familiar with, correct?
Oh, Nine Nights of Night Prayer is coming. Yes, yeah. Nine Nights of Night Prayer. Parish, I'm familiar with, a pastor I'm familiar with. So Father Ed Sosinski, we were arguing about how many parishes he has. Sometimes when he talks, I think he's got 14, but I think it's a little less than that. He'll love listening to that and me teasing him. But they're hosting at their Lodi location, Nine Nights of Night Prayer. I think he's already got all of his volunteers signed up. Where to go? It's off of Buffum Road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Our Lady Help of Christians.
Our Lady Help of Christians.
Yep. So it'll start on March 17th. That's one of nine churches doing it in the diocese. It'll run all the way to the Feast of the Annunciation on the 25th.
Correct.
And happy Lent, everybody. They'll start tomorrow. We're recording this on Fat Tuesday. So Ash Wednesday is tomorrow. That means the first Sunday of Lent is this week. The gospel is from Matthew. At that time, Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. And afterwards he was hungry, I would think. The tempter approached and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become loaves of bread." He said in reply, "It is written, one does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes forth from the mouth of God." Thoughts, quandaries, dilemmas?
Jesus was led out to the desert to be tempted. He's like us in all things but sin. So we should expect, if we take our faith seriously, that we'll be tempted to during this season of Lent if we take our prayer, fasting, and alms giving seriously.
Yeah. By the way, you know, I said I was going to fast from the elevator to see what the note was the other day.
Yeah.
They're shutting the staircase down.
Well, you can always take the back staircase, you know.
Oh, you have to show me where that is. I don't even know where that is.
I've actually never used it. Okay, it's by the freight elevator, though.
Maybe today.
Okay.
All right.
I was going to say that the other piece from the gospel there, that he will command his angels concerning you, and with their hands they will support you. So if you are struggling, also lean into that.
Yeah, that would be great.
Your counselor and the angels, both. Amen. Both and.
Yes.
Both and. So definitely. Not a sin to receive psychological help, not a sin to listen to us here on Question of Faith.